Hello, everybody. How are you doing? It's been a while. It's been a while. And I'm sitting here. It's very windy today. Very windy tonight, in fact. November, we just had a presidential election. Change is in the air. And I always gravitate more towards what's best for humanity in my belief system. So for me, it's a good thing. But change is always a good and bad thing as well. But those who wish to preserve that stagnant status quo of all of the things that bring us down the past 4 years. And I don't mean any one man, I mean policy-wise. I'm not here to talk bad about anyone, but policy-wise. To me, it's a breath of fresh air to see a change in the air. Now, of course, you're not giving much of a choice. I don't see scholars or scientists or spiritual masters being elected to president anytime soon. And so in that aspect, I'd see that we are far from being mediated in some way to acquire a sense of accomplishment through our congenial togetherness as a people. And speaking of which, I am not here to speak about the presidential election. It's windy today, so I'm trying to see if maybe I can connect on here. I've had a problem lately with these podcasts. Other people have. I know Raylan Nelson has. Audio glitches in them, if that happens. Clicking and fading in and fading out. It's something with the podcast system that's causing this. It's not so much in our audio. I don't know if it's in when it's uploaded or what the problem is, the snafu in it, but it's a snafu. And yeah, it's annoying as heck. So I'm sitting here right now. I've got my desk cleaned off, ready for fall, ready to do some writing. We're still in the middle of this horrible pandemic, so I'm not able to totally clean my mind and free my mind. It's starting to weigh on me very heavily to have these fountain pens. And I'm just going to talk about some of the ones I have right in front of me to write with. I have a Noodler's Creeper. I have this beautiful cross solid gold fountain pen that's a Century 2. Two Gen Hows. I have a nice Twisby. I have the gem one that I mentioned in my one poem in my last book that's over 100 years old. My first fountain pen, which is a Gen Hao, and a black Gen Hao. And downstairs, I'm really hooked on these. Here's a little Charlie pen. I'm really hooked on these Noodler's pens. When you align with somebody that has the same belief systems that you do. For instance, he makes these for the Ahab, a plastic ink reservoir that is much like the cartridges. Excuse me. Much like the cartridges that you would normally use. He says that he switched to these where they're reusable, not disposable, because the ones that are disposable, they found them that have killed sea life. And Nathan Tardif is a very, I would say, thoughtful individual. He may not align totally with my philosophical and political beliefs, but I find a kinship to this man and how he makes things. And it's experimental nature of it that I enjoy them. And so I've done a great deal of writing with Nathan's pens up until March. In March, I fell off a tree and hurt myself very badly. I landed on a ladder, and I spent the past 6 months healing myself, doing small exercises, working hard at building myself up. A lot of these charities I've been a part of for many, 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 many years, nearly 20 years, I've seen people that have struggled like this, and I've always been supportive of them, and they are my heroes. I just stated recently that the most self-actualized people I've ever met in my life are people that have incredible, incredible physical ailments, diseases, things, even like my father with cancer. This is Pancreatic Cancer Awareness Month, so let's put it all out there. These are the people that have left their ego behind. And it taught me, through my inability to even sit up in a chair and to get out of bed and dress myself, I managed to, with different ways, to dress myself. But it taught me just what these people deal with every day. To them, it's not a matter of, will I heal? To myself, it was, well, I might heal, and I have to a great deal. I'm not back to 100%. But I relatively felt that what their struggles are to do basic tasks and yet still be so divinely inspired by their wisdom is something I lean towards. And to me, that is quintessential of every shift in a paradigm from where you live as a normal person and complain about, oh, my job, this, that, which normal times is part of life. This year, we have that reason to complain. We could go to the store and pick up coronavirus, and it could kill us. So for all of us this year, it has been a major paradigm shift. It's the same paradigm shift is when you lose a loved one. And many of us have. Many of my good friends I've lost this year. I've mentioned them in other podcasts. Do you know that feeling when you lose somebody? And as even if you expect it, or even worse if it's unexpected. And I'm thinking about my uncle. I'm thinking about my uncle when he passed away. For instance, he'd been on dialysis for a while. And I went in to bring him a charging cord. He had not heard from him in several days. And this is going back about 2 years. And he called my mother late at night and said, well, you know, my phone hasn't been on me. I need a charging cord. And I had this very odd rainbow charging cord that was 10 feet long that I had bought for work. And I thought, well, we're in traveling. It was very convenient. It was not something I would normally buy, but it was convenient for me. And I said, well, I'll bring it into him because this is something that he will use. It's going to be a distance that'll span longer than a regular 6-foot cord. And I said, I'll go along. I'll give him my cord. I'll definitely give him my cord. And we sat there seeing him that morning. His port for his dialysis had to be fixed. And this is how crisp and clear these memories are, because they're traumatic moments, okay, to me. And he's telling us that he's sitting there and he's bloated because he's not getting the dialysis he needs. And this is my Uncle Dan. This is a guy that has been a part of my life in many ways and many aspects, a huge, well-rounded human being, alcohol problem, many, many vices in his life, but somebody you could call at any moment. Probably the only uncle I can say that about at that time. Grew up with him over here every summer, fishing, you name it. And he's sitting there and he goes, oh, F, yeah, because he knew he wasn't doing well. And I gave him the charger. We were talking, and he was saying when he was a kid about Doc Fetcho, this dog bit him on the ass, and he had to get stitches. And it was a story about how this doctor had came out to the place and at the house. So then they take him down, and they said, we're going to take him into surgery. And they're wheeling him down this hallway. And at Johnstown, there's this large hallway they wheel you through. And I'm trying to keep up with these doctors and nurses, and I'm can't. They're going so fast with him on a gurney. It's unbelievable. They're flying by so quickly. And then we're in a waiting room. And he makes it through the surgery, and the doctor comes in and says to me that this man is not long for this world. Things didn't go right. They went fine, but that he has an infection. Now, I can't prove that it was an infection from when they drained his the fluid in him, but I assume that's what it was, that they made a mistake. And I said to the doctor in a profound moment of just clarity, just honesty, I said, you bury your mistakes. And by that evening, my uncle was dead. Ironically, from their surgery. So I spent the next few days processing this, going to the funeral, the cemetery, being there mainly for my mother. And these thoughts that go through your mind when I have my other two uncles and my mother together and my uncle that's dead in the coffin, thinking that this is the last time they're all going to be together, and he's really not there. His spirit has moved on, and it was evident because you couldn't even feel him there. My Uncle Dan was somebody that had this large soul of kindness and gratitude and love for everybody. I remember one time he said to me, "Bring your truck over," and he got this large gas grill. I mean, this thing was a huge, beautiful. This was a man by no means had a lot of money. And he said, "Can you load it in there?" And I'm like, "Wow, who the hell are you getting this for?" And he says, "I got this for your mom." That's who Danny was. Okay. Danny would always give the best to other people and keep nothing for himself. He was one of those people that taught me what true living was. So I saw the man, I saw his life end. And there's more to the story than that. I'm not going to tell it all, obviously. But I was set with this feeling that I expected he was going to die sometime. But all of a sudden, I just felt this shock. And I felt that the whole paradigm of what I thought life was had just been switched. Something had been missing, would never be brought back. One of the characters in the play of life had been lost. And I sit looking through so many of my ancestors and know this has happened for generations and generations with everybody that has lost someone. We are not the only ones to have lost someone. So when this happened, I realized that feeling that reality is not exactly what you interpret it as. That's your reality, and when something minor changes in it, and something major changes in it. It shows you the shortcomings of all of your beliefs, all of your belief structures, and what really matters. This year has been no less for us, for 240,000 families. It has been just this. It has been loss. It has been death. It has been this disease. And for those who are without work, it has been equally as troubling and financially well. I myself have had a lot of financial difficulties this year. It's been due to one individual in particular, but I'm not here to speak about him. It's not a very important matter. It's just somebody that's trying to make my life a living hell during a pandemic. And it's realized in my life it speaks more to this person and who they are than it does to myself. But we're all going through something in some aspect of our lives. I know for many of my artist friends, I mentioned Raylan Nelson earlier, she posted a picture of her seeing her grandfather, who just happens to be a famous singer. I won't mention his name. It might be Willie Nelson, it may not be. It is Willie. It is Willie Nelson. But it was such a beautiful picture, and it made me It made me cry when I saw it because I know it's been so long since she's seen her grandfather this year. He's been keeping safe. I don't like to think of Willie Nelson as elderly, but he is. He's a patriarch. He's an American treasure. He's a spiritual leader. He's a guru. I've read his book, The Tao of Willie, and I was blown away by the wisdom in it that Willie has, and even in the humor. So we've all been suffering in some way or another, and all of our lives have been set away from what we had and what we have. Not that we've lost incredibly a lot of things. I'm sure that a disease will run its course. We will live or we will die, myself included. I may not be here in a year. I have no control over this. None of us do. This is life. As I said to my father when he had pancreatic cancer and was really down one day, was sitting on a swing. He was in his late 80s. And I said to him, I said, you know, you're not dying from cancer. You're living with it. And someday you will die, and someday I will die. Someday we all will die. And you've lived many times my own life. And I have a little bit of regret on how I said this to him because I hope I came across well. But I said, you know, Dad, I said, I could step out off the swing, go out for the mail, and get hit by a Mack truck, and my life will be over. You are living with something that is a horrible disease, just as, you know, all my friends with ALS and other diseases have. And I said, you know, it's not something you want. It's not something that's supposed to be easy. It's not something you're supposed to say, oh, it doesn't matter. But you are still alive, and do not get down about it. So that's how we have to approach life. Every day is a very, very precious, meaningful, and important gift. And I want to get into this subject. It's 17 minutes into it, and I needed to start that basis because I've been reading a book by Dr. Wayne Dyer, who was, in many parts, not something somebody I met in life, as far as like in person. I had spoken to, shared emails with, read many of his books, going back to Uranus Zones, his first book, and many after that, on to the one he wrote on the Tao Te Ching, Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life, Excuses Be Gone, and many others, and found him to be a very powerful spiritual leader based in a psychological paradigm that is a humanistic. You know, the pyramid of needs and self-actualization that he started with his own teacher. And not to get deep into psychology and theory, but if you study that, you will know what I mean about self-actualization is something I too find and gravitate to as a psychologist. That is my background as well. And you start out with the fallacy in psychology of trying to find why people tick. And you either get caught up in doing research psychology, which is psychology on a group of people, or you get caught up in doing psychology on a person's of treatment, be it drug and alcohol, as I do, be it sexual issues, as I do as well, be it PTSD, as I do as well, be it abnormal psychology, mental disorders, attachment disorders, you name it, identity disorders. That I don't do as much, but I have dealt with it. It's a part of the aspect. He really got into that. And you see people as this other than. You're treating them to help them be as a facilitator to grow, overcome adversity, to be somewhat of a functioning human being. And you go with Vygotsky, which was a great educational psychology leader, that said, hey, if I'm up here and this person I'm trying to teach is here. I have to meet them in the middle. So a lot of this is about meeting in the middle. And in doing so, Wayne Dyer writes this, I believe his last book. Shortly after this book, he passed away. And I've been reading this book off and on for about a year now. Not that it's a book that's unreadable, not that it's a book that I do not want to read, but that it's a book I want to take in stride and even go back, read a chapter, and as weird as this sounds, go back and read it a month later and see what it says to me now. And I just finished this. I can see clearly now. And I put this up there with a book by his daughter that he wrote with his daughter, Serena Dyer. They've had a lot of, her sisters and her have had a lot of incredible tragedy this year. And I was just sitting here thinking about them while I was reading this. And I get a tear in my eye because they're such incredibly good people. And though their father passed away, I see so much beauty in them. I don't message them very often, but I always try to send a little few words of peace, love, and encouragement their way. And I'm doing that right now. Wayne was really big into the meditation, the Japa meditation. It is the name of God being repeated. And when I climbed Stony Man the first time, one of the first things I saw was a ribbon, as you'd see in Tibet. Ad Padme, you know. And the whole meaning of the name of God, those syllables mean God. So the pronunciation of the name of God repeatedly as a mantra. And that's giving good energy out to everybody. Because when you say the name of God, when you speak the name of God, it is the I am that I am in life. And that is included in Namaste. The part of God in I sees the part of God in you. And you are seeing God in everybody. So when you speak the name of God in a mantra, a prayer, you are idyllically speaking the same of every person you meet, and the good in them. And Wayne was very adamant in this book that when he started writing, first as a psychologist, later as a spiritualist, he became real self-actualized to the idea that it was like God speaking through him. And some of the stuff in the book gets a little out there in ways that most people look at it and not like it. The book got horrible reviews, because it was not a self-help book. It was not as his other books. This book was about him. It was about his struggles. It talked about his father when he had been growing up, who was an alcoholic, and his mother and could not take care of them. And they had been given up for adoption. He grew up in foster care. He grew up with a lot of pain. And the pain in this man was so much to overcome that he sought accomplishment. And he worked very, very hard to get his PhD and work at St. John's University, where my own cousins are professors at. And I think that these quantum moments he speaks of, these moments of God-realized thought, where I can see with Wayne many things in myself. That I had spoken about this. He taught there. His professor at University of Pittsburgh that had given him this Japa meditation was a professor at the same school that I was going to. So I can understand where he's coming from in this book. Most people are used to a Wayne Dyer book that talks about, not about himself. But there is nothing wrong with having a biography, an autobiography of Wayne Dyer himself. And in fact, you know, you can read it, and if you don't like it, you do not have to read this book, okay? But if you want to know Wayne Dyer the man, and that's the important part, you can have a misconception of Wayne Dyer as some kind of major spiritual leader, like he is the Buddha himself. And he would laugh at that. He would laugh and say, oh my God, please don't ever call me the Buddha. A lot of people do. They look at Wayne Dyer and his quotes and his books, and they try to take what he is saying and use it as a cookie cutter for themselves. And I know all these big psychological terms. I'm not using them for this reason, he says in this book. He wrote his first book, Urania Stones, because he saw what I saw. And this is why I'd spoken to him so much about this. When I started treating clients, I could go in there and say, hey, you know, you're not, I could use all these terms, you know, I'm not even going to use half of them because they're not important. But if I don't speak on the level, going back to Vygotsky, coming down to their level and bringing them up to yours, I'm saying nothing. I'm saying words they don't understand. So to me, in therapy, in life, in everyday life, in anything, if you go to a car dealership, you have some, okay, 16-year-old girl, you're driving down the road, her car breaks down, her daddy just got her car. She's about as green behind the ears as anybody. You're going to tell her how to change a tire? No, you're going to show her. You're going to show her. You're going to help her out. You're going to teach this child how to, what is wrong with her car and how to make it work. Okay? This is the same aspect of people that are in a crisis. Okay? You don't sit there and take the time and belittle them. You take the time and show them what is wrong. They've never known this before. Their whole lives have never been entangled with this. And you may have lived, for me, 42 years, with other people, 80 years. And to speak down to people when they're young and don't know it is ignorance. That's ignorance, not them. They are not ignorant. You are the one that is ignorant because you're not teaching it to them. So Wayne spoke about this so much and how he manifests his dialogue and writes his first book. But before that, he's dealing with his father passing away. He's dealing with becoming, he wants to be a doctor of psychology. And he does. He becomes one. But he goes to his father's grave and he is very angry. And he's very angry at all of it. And he wants to have a dialogue with this man, but he's the man has passed on. The man was an alcoholic. The man had abandoned him and his brothers. And Wayne has this miraculous moment where he lets go. And by letting go, he that's a quantum moment. And he gets inspired by all these psychologists he knows that are very famous ones. You can read about it. I will not spoil the book. But the whole context of Wayne's book is meeting, you know, a situation with St. Francis of Assisi, Mother Teresa, the man who gave him the meditation on Japa meditation, a man who's a quadriplegic, a speaker who was at the Holocaust, who survived the Holocaust, and Wayne felt truly humbled, saying, I'm saying all this stuff, but this man's lived it. The man who gave him Japa meditation, they had a meeting, and they both sat in a room for 20 minutes, said nothing, just looked at each other, and had this spiritual moment of just knowing one another. Then towards the end of his life, he met a woman who survived the Rwanda genocide, and equally. Wayne took his life in much the way, living it, that my good friend is in the music business too as well. All of my heroes, you know, they say never meet them. I've mentioned it before. They have used what they've done to look at other talent and help rise them up to their level. Not to their level, but they are inspired. These become their heroes. And Wayne speaks about this in many, many ways. Wayne is also very human in this book. Wayne is not being your spiritual teacher in this book. He's being a human being on a process of growth. And to a lot of people, that's uncomfortable because it's not in line with what they want to think of Wayne Dyer. A lot of people will see it and say it's all ego. Oh, wow, he's comparing himself to St. Francis of Assisi. Oh, wow, he's saying that all his kids being born and how it was this. He goes through so many processes in his book. And it does get muddied down to a certain degree, but it's allowed because what it is showing you is the process of Wayne Dyer's life. He's giving you the blueprints. He's giving you all those ugly details you never wanted to know. He's saying, "Hey, I had a problem with alcohol. I actually, didn't go to a restaurant because they didn't serve alcohol, and I looked back at my life and said, 15 years, not a day did I not drink." He had a skit with one of his classes as a professor, and this one student dressed up as a fat professor, and he thought, "What's this about?" And realized, "Oh wow, they're making fun of me." So he got into jogging. Wayne got into, in many ways, the same way as Carl Jung did. And when he left Freud, he learned to not take himself as seriously, but to see the divine purpose in his life. He is a facilitator. He is not God. And this self-help thing is something I honestly criticized him a lot for when he was alive. I feel bad for it. I had very many people that read his books, and I told them, "Well, you got to read this," and they got the absolute wrong idea from them than I had. And I thought, "Wow, did they read the same thing?" I thought, "Oh my God, this must be Mr. Dyer's problem," but it wasn't. It was nowhere near his problem. People will interpret things the way they do it, what they need to hear it at that moment in their lives. And who am I? What arrogance of me to assume that I would know what's right and wrong for somebody else. That was his point. Now, why did I feel this way? This is what every good therapist, this is why I'm re-examining this. Why did I feel this way? And this is what Wayne does in this book. I felt this way because there was something that I internalized that should have been a certain way that wasn't. And it didn't naturally pan out that way. This is the whole purpose of life. This is the whole purpose of him going back to the man he met at survived Auschwitz, where somebody would give you a glass of water with a fish head in it to keep you alive. And you have the choice. You could think this is the most disgusting thing in the world, or to be grateful that life has given you this, and to not allow those negative influences to see a fish head with water. You are not your consequences. And I bring this whole book up in this whole situation because this year we have been, in a way, in that. We've been questioning ourselves. We've been doubting our very existence, the very structures of fabrics of our realities, the lies we have made for ourselves, the excuses, and above all, the reasons we should feel better than those less than us. And we all do it, let's be honest. If you can drive by somebody who is sitting out and is legitimately hurting for money at a time like now, and not ask them, "May I help you?" There is a certain risk to yourself. Yes, I'm not saying that people should help everybody. But if you can do that, then you are seeing yourself different than them. And he says in this book, Mother Teresa, somebody asks, "What can I do for you?" They're looking at this saintly woman. And what does Mother Teresa say? She says, "Well, wake up tomorrow and go out to the streets and find somebody who is homeless and ask them if they are alone. And if they say they feel alone, say, 'No, you are not alone.'" This selfless sacrifice that Wayne speaks of in his book, as well as the lowest point, as well as his highest point, where he comes off, he can come off a little brass in this book. He does all this, and he's in the right space at the right time. And oh my God, you can say, "Wow, Wayne, this is your greatest hit." But Wayne wasn't meaning it that way. Everywhere Wayne coming from in this book and in life, he wanted to be considered a teacher. He wanted to be somebody that could show what he had overcame in his life risen above and aimed at goals. Goals to be not better than anybody. So that's the biggest thing I drew from this book. Other people wrote complaints like, oh my God, he thinks he's a reincarnation of St. Francis of Assisi. No, he never said that. He never said that. He said, I felt as if I had been St. Francis of Assisi, or I had been somebody that had been there with him. In other words, the spirit that guided St. Francis of Assisi, the same one that writes his books, the same spirit of God he sees in every human being when he says the name of God in a japa meditation, or says namaste to somebody, or says amen in church, and gives, is that same spirit of giving. Thanksgiving this year is and Christmas are going to be very different. It's going to be a tough time for a lot of people, and I wanted to end this with a little thought. Now, thinking of that, I just got a text from a very good older friend of mine. keep in touch with, it's just right there, keep in touch with people that matter to you. Keep in touch with people that mean to you. It doesn't have to be in person. That's a very dangerous thing. We're going through a pandemic that's going to, these next few months are going to be the some of the worst things that we as human beings have ever lived through. And if I'm not here in the springtime, I want you to think about me. Let these words live on. Let this Thanksgiving be truly about Thanksgiving. Let this Christmas not be about the ugly sweater you're buying for grandpa, or your dad, or your mom, or your sister. If you get them something, great, but don't live in the material world. Live in the world of spirit, of purpose, as Wayne Dyer would say, source. You are the greatest gift you will ever give anybody else. And they are the greatest gift that you will ever receive. Even those who try to bring you down and destroy you are just but tests in your life. If you can see the maladaptive behaviors they have, you can learn how to deal with the maladaptive behaviors in your own life and how to maybe someday give them the love they need to help to overcome their own. It doesn't mean your enemies are supposed to be someone you're supposed to look up to, trust me. But in the whole scheme of things, what really matters in this world is that same thought that when you lose somebody, what do you lose? You lose the person, but you also are afraid to live without them in your life because they are such an influence. And their influence in your life helps shape who you are. And you're afraid to be somebody other than who they've known. That jaded sense of loss of not being able to feel. Don't ever let it come into your heart. And open yourself to the inward beauty that shines within. So this Christmas, let's get back to this and every holiday, no matter what your religion is. To me, I celebrate Christmas, but so I will leave it at Thanksgiving. Let's have Thanksgiving and New Year and Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and all those religions. Let's have them mean about one another. And if you can, I want to leave a little thing about Hanukkah. I will do another podcast about this, but my father, when he was growing up, was always taught in the Russian Orthodox that the Jews lived over this side of town, the Polish lived over this side, the Italians lived that side. That's how it was. And the Russians lived on this side. They all had their own churches. And there were a lot of anti-Semitic things that the Catholic churches and other people said. But my father was dating a little Jewish girl, and he thought the world of her. And they were very good friends, and she was a great teacher to him in his life. And he said to the priest the one day when he'd gone to her synagogue, and this is my dad at like 12, okay? This is my dad was one of my teachers, okay? He said to the priest, he said, "Hey, you know, I'm going to bring this girl, this, and I can't even think of her name, I feel bad, to the church. And I'm kind of dating her. And all the stuff you say, could you please not say it to her, because it kind of hurts." And the priest thought about it, and he said, "You know, my whole life I've been told to say this." And he said, "Pete, you've humbled me. You've truly humbled me with your grace, because I've been parroting ignorance. And I will not say this now that I've said in the past, and I will never say it again, because you are absolutely right." That is what we need in this world right now. We don't need our tribes and clans and everything. We need, right now through this pandemic, for everybody to care about one another. Even if they're not your race, color, creed, religion, socioeconomic class, or sexual orientation, we have to be true human beings, as the Cheyenne said, the Lakota said, and the Lenape, human beings. So I leave you with that, and this is probably the longest podcast I've done in a while. But it's an important one, because Thanksgiving this year should be, as all holidays, about oneness with our fellow human beings. And I'll leave you with Wayne's book. Really buy this book. Find it. I'll put out three of them. The one with his daughter, Serena, Excuses Be Gone. And I Can See Clearly Now. I'm not going to spoil these books. They're worth reading. They're worth the whole, not just if you've read his books, but to know why he wrote them, his thought process. Some of the most profound words you read from Wayne Dyer when he was going through a divorce, questioning his own sense of purpose. He was a human being. And I leave this right now just thinking of Wayne. I miss Wayne. I want to send my loving thoughts out to the universe, to Wayne Dyer, and thank the universe for making human beings like him, for all of us to be inspired by. God bless you all.